They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Ahead of the World Economic Forum in Switzerland that opens today, a Bloomberg survey finds that 59% of international investors think the global economy's improving. That's the highest level of optimism in 5 years, and the mood is up strikingly from the previous survey in November. Driving this in large part are signs the U.S. economy is on the mend. While that last employment report was shaky, spending by a subset of American consumers has been strong. Michelle Meyer is senior U.S. economist at Bank of America.
Consumer spending is looking more and more positive. The holiday shopping season ended on a strong note. And to me, one of the impressive stories when it comes to thinking about the consumer for this year is the health of their balance sheet. We've seen pretty dramatic wealth gains in 2013, driven by the big rally in the stock market, but also gains in home prices.
But you're saying at a time that the president of the United States has been focusing on inequality. Are you saying this wealth effect is more widely spread than we give it credit for?
Well, not really. It is, as you suggest, and as the president has noted, the wealth gains are concentrated in the upper income groups. Housing wealth tends to be more broadly distributed. So the gains we've seen in home prices certainly will support more of the average individual. But either way, it's gains in wealth, and that should work to drive business investment, and business investment not just in capital but also in labor, which helps to support income growth. So the wealth effect could be an important spark for the rest of the economy.
Michelle Meyer, senior U.S. economist at Bank of America, thank you.
You've got it.
A new study is opening a window into the hot field of online learning, or massive open online courses, or MOOCs. The paper looks at hundreds of thousands of students who took online classes through Harvard and MIT. Mark Garrison reports.
The research shows more than 800,000 people signed up for these free courses through the online platform edX, but only about 5% actually finished the classes. The Harvard and MIT faculty involved say that may not be a problem online. Harvard education professor Andrew Ho says their findings show many just sampled the classes.
The instructors welcome these kinds of curious browsers.
That won't please online learning skeptics who worry online classes don't engage students enough. There's also the question of how to pay for the cost of offering these classes. MIT researcher Isaac Shuang.
It brings a completely new approach to teaching. It's a different economy.
And that creates challenges, both for nonprofits like edX as well as for-profit universities. Big public companies and private equity firms back many for-profit colleges, and they see online courses as a way to bring in more students and more money. As more people get comfortable with the technology, we'll see more digital courses from universities in the nonprofit and for-profit world. I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
In the sci-fi movie Gattaca, society turns on everyone's genetics test. In the 2014 world, it seems the fulcrum of all things may be your credit score. You expect the bank to look before lending you money, but what about credit checks when you go up for a new job? A recent study shows that 1 in 10 job applicants have been rejected because something turned up in their credit history. And last month, Senator Elizabeth Warren introduced a bill that would, among other things, bar the use of credit reports in hiring. Personal finance expert Carmen Wong Ulrich is host of our program Marketplace Money. Carmen, good morning.
Good morning.
So what do employers hope to get out of a credit report if they're trying to hire?
Well, listen, what they're trying to do is filter, right? So they're using a credit score to determine if you're someone who's a risky hire. But it doesn't necessarily go together that if you have a bad credit score that you're going to be a bad employee.
Now, even supporters of reform to this can see that there may be a place for credit checks if you're interviewing for a job that involves access to a bank vault.
Yeah, but that's mostly because in the past, this is where it all started. Financial institutions used it. Human resources departments used it because they judged that if you had bad credit or you had too much debt, you would be more likely to steal or to be dishonest with very sensitive information. However, today, we know that people's credit reports are a mess for a couple of things. One, long-term unemployment, foreclosures on a home, or medical debt, which is the number one reason people declare bankruptcy, and that's not going to make you a bad employee.
What do we know from the data? Is there actually any kind of proven relationship between a person who has lower credit score and their ability to perform tasks at work?
David, I have been in personal finance for 18 years, and I have yet to see proof that those things are more than a correlation. That's not causation. Also, Demos, the think tank, did a study and a report, and they found that up to 20 million Americans have errors in their credit reports. So if we're leaning on something that has identity theft, a long-term unemployment, medical costs, all of these other reasons why your credit score isn't beautiful, then it shouldn't be used against you to become an employee.
Now, on your show, Marketplace Money, I see you doing a credit special. What's this thing about credit reports and dating?
Oh, David, this is a juicy one. Can you believe that there are dating sites now that are based off of your credit reports and scores? That's how you're matched up?
Could you imagine on a first date bringing up credit score?
Now, here's the thing. It's not bad to talk about money, right? You want to have these discussions. But I don't think as a first date that's a thing to do. But if you want to be that person, there are websites, dating sites now just for you.
I suppose we're also supposed to talk about our medical history early on with the potential partner. Our Marketplace Money host tweets at Live Money, Carmen Wong Ulrich. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, David.
If you miss it on the air, more on that credit stuff, including the credit and dating story, will go online this coming weekend, marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.